From Sacramento, the Bishop's Radio Hour with Bob Dunning. Focusing on today's issues in the context of gospel values. Now, here's Bob Dunning on Relevant Radio.
That's me. Welcome to you on this beautiful day the Lord has made. Appreciate you all being with us on the Bishop's Hour, and we're pleased to welcome in Jane Lee, God's Heart and Hands Ministry, God's Heart and Hands at gmail.com. Jane, good day.
Good day, Bob. It's so good to talk to you. It always is.
Good to have you on. I say this to, well, I'm saying it to you, but I say it to a lot of our guests. We miss seeing you in person.
And I truly miss being across the table from you. There's just a different experience when it's, I mean, you're doing a great job carrying this whole thing, but to have somebody else across the table, there's just a different dynamic. And I look forward to when we will get back to normal.
We can throw things at each other. It's like a difference between a phone conversation, which, you know, thank God for Alexander Graham Bell, but
true.
You know, there's no substitute for eye contact and body language and all those things that the way we talk when we're not talking.
That's true. The human contact, we will never be able to replace it. They talk about robots taking over the world. Truly, I don't think it'll happen, because people will not give up that human contact. It has a purpose, but I don't think we'll ever give up.
Not on this show, but I can remember years ago when I was on KFBK at a 9 to midnight show every night, and Monday through Friday, and caller-driven, like so much talk radio is and was.
Mm-hmm.
And virtually all, you know, by phone. We'd occasionally have a guest in the studio, but if somebody semi-famous was coming through town and we could lasso him, you know, and pull him in.
Uh-huh.
But, and, you know, you have a producer there and a call screener and et cetera. And yet, every now and then, your guests, without warning, would what we would call go off the rails, you know, and you couldn't get rid of them fast enough. And it was like, you know, stuff that was either inappropriate or, you know, we had a button, they call it the kill button, where uh-huh. if somebody said something inappropriate, you had 8 seconds that uh-huh. to hit that button, because there was an uh-huh. eight second delay precisely for that reason. So that uh-huh. if something bad happened, the FCC wasn't going to ever hear it, because you'd hit that button. And when you hit that button, there would be this voice of God saying, you can't say that on the radio, you know. And I only used it once, and it was by accident. Uh-huh. I accidentally pushed the wrong button. But guests would go off the rails, you know. And you know, if they were in studio with you, that wouldn't happen. You would see
That's
body
true.
Language. You could see terror in their eyes or something, you know. And you go, uh-oh, they're getting ready to do something weird here.
I love that thought of a button that the voice of God speaks. You can't do that.
You can't do that on the radio.
You really brought up a novel concept. And wouldn't we love to use that right now in society and everything that's going on? Just a button where God will speak from the sky and give us direction.
Oh, man. I've prayed for that so many times, Jane.
Really?
I hear these. It's usually an evangelical preacher, and they'll say, "God came down and He was talking to me just like we're talking right now in the living room, Bob." And I go, "Really? I have not had that experience. I have, in my mind, heard the voice of God, heard the will of God, heard, you know, God speak to me."
Mm-hmm.
But not like we're sitting in the living room talking, you know. I mean,
right.
in your soul it is, in your heart it is. But they're talking about physically hearing it with their ears.
Interesting.
I've not had that experience.
Interesting. Well, you bring up a really good point of what's going on and everything in society. And as all of us, we're talking, you talk with many of your guests about how to interpret what's going on. And part of the mission of God's Heart and Hands is seeing parents as God's heart and hands on earth, that we are that conduit between our children and God, and how to help them interpret the voice of God, the connection with God when He does communicate with us, is, I think, one of our most important jobs. and to help them understand how to listen and how to learn how to pray and all of that. So you bring up a really good point about that. And I think that especially now with so much going on, and we talk a lot about why is God allowing this? Why is this going on? What do we do? And I think it's across the board. But I think as long as we're looking as parents to know how to help our children and to guide them and to bring them back to God, especially in this time. I tell my students, because I'm a math tutor, you know, you're living in a time that they're going to write about in the history books. And
Yes.
And how to help them interpret it. Because they look to any adult. And they even look to me being at their math tutor sometimes, and they'll say things. And then I have to get back to the parents to tell them what I've talked to their child about, because I think that's a responsibility of another adult outside the family. But then because they're trying to find it anywhere and trying to understand.
Yeah,
and and then how to help them, you know, navigate through it. We're starting to open up a little bit. Some schools are different. Every district's different. Every church, even within our diocese, is being done a little slightly different, slightly different flavor.
Yeah, exactly. You know, when I would look at my math tutor, it was like, how can I get out of here?
Okay, I won't be putting you down for a recommendation on my commercial.
But you know, as you so eloquently put it, though, Jane, you're not quoting from the catechism, but you're paraphrasing it. That parents are the first educators of their children, and you say, we're the ones that are connecting our kids to God, and if not us, who? You know,
right.
And yes, we have all our wonderful clergy and so many wonderful catechists and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But it starts in the home. And the catechism says, mom and dad, you're the primary, you're the first educators of your children.
Yes.
And all of our teachers all in Catholic schools and who are, they're augmenting, they're leading in many ways, but it still comes back to the parents.
Yes, they compare everything directly or indirectly to what their parents have done. And it needs to support that. And I think as seeing parents as the link between God's heart and hands, and all adults really, is that we have to back up the parents. We have to, with a mind's eye, towards what would your parents want? Because I've had a couple of cases, one case in particular, a high school student said to me that she's seen on social media where there's other high schoolers, not her immediate friends, but the next circle out, so I'm broaching a kind of a delicate subject to kind of get the word out there, that kids are feeling, some kids, not all, are feeling so overwhelmed by being backed up on assignments, they see no way out.
Yeah.
Literally no way out. And so they're thinking the only way out is to end my life. Mm-hmm. And what was most shocking to her, besides that, was the hundreds of students that agreed.
Hmm.
And I had to, you need to tell your parents. You need to talk to your parents.
Yep.
And so I had to tell them right afterwards, this is what she's telling me. I have to let you know. I know she's going to talk to you, but I need to let you guys know. But just to get the word out, and we have a responsibility as everyone else in our society and actually humanity to back up our parents and to back up the children, what we think the child would say. I mean, excuse me, what we think the parent would say to the child, and to be a support for every other parent that's out there. And that's something that's going on right now. We're not supporting families. You know, you and I have talked before about how we're intruding in the family. Our high schoolers, they can't get an aspirin, but yet they can go off and have a medical procedure without us knowing it.
Right.
And so there's this interference that's going on. So I'm really, like, this year, I think it's just so perfect that the Pope declared the year of St. Joseph.
And isn't then that wonderful?
It couldn't be any better. And then he's declared the, I'm gonna mess up the title because I do not do Latin well, Amoris Laetitia. There we go. Did I get it right? Amoris Laetitia.
I'm glad you pronounced it. I was going to let you do that.
Oh, were you?
Yeah.
I was hoping you'd save me.
And then I'll throw you the life raft, but I have no idea how to pronounce it.
Thank you. But you know the document I'm talking about.
Yes.
I think it was 3 years ago he came out with it. He's declared it as the AL, or we'll go with that, the AL family year,
mm-hmm.
in conjunction with the year of St. Joseph. And it's going to overlap quite a bit, and it's going to end, the AL family year is going to end in June of 2022 with the 10th International Family Conference. Like
right.
They do World Youth Day, they're doing a Family Day. They do it every 3 years.
Right.
And so those two together, I just am like almost awestruck that God has reached through this chaos and this change and this difficulty like we've never seen, that we have never seen that have been alive right now, and to say, here, here's the year of St. Joseph, a model for families, the patron of the family and the patron of the Universal Church, and the AL family year. I think there's so much richness and so much support there to help us.
It's the perfect overlap. Of course, the year of St. Joseph started on December 8th, so that's 3.5 or so months ago, and we'll run through December 8th of 2021 of this year, the Feast of the Immaculate Conception. And then, as you say, the other one won't end until AL. I'm just calling it AL like you are.
There you go.
In baseball, that's the American League, and the NL is the National League.
You just make God laugh. That is so good.
That's good. I'm glad God is laughing. And and that one will run until June of 2022. So that's a wonderful overlap.
Right, and I believe it was just opened on the 19th of this month, so just last week.
So it's the St. Joseph's Day.
Yes, that's right. So we're going to have close to a 9-month, maybe 8.5-month overlap, which is a perfect time for us to really, that's one of the best tools, the best parts about the internet. There are some great parts to it, is it gives us access to that, is you can just dive deep into it. And the AL family year was created and is being overseen by the Dicastery for Laity, Family, and Life. And one of the best quotes I loved was, the pandemic experience has highlighted the central role of the family as the domestic church and has shown the importance of community ties between families. So it's bringing back, supporting what you just said about the family being the domestic church, and then also the community ties between families. And that's something I'm really seeing this last year, and I'm sure you're seeing it too, that has been disrupted.
Yep.
Is our connection and our community, family to family, within families. You know, the grandparents that haven't hugged their grandchildren in, gosh, I don't know how long. People that have not been out of their house in a year. I was in Target last week, and a woman, and that's one thing now, is people are much more sociable, and it's really lovely. And she's just giddy, and she's so happy, and she's talking about all the inventions that she's seeing in Target because she hadn't been out of the house in a year.
Yeah.
Wow. So it was just really joyful to be there and share that.
Or even
with her.
If you've been out of the house, maybe went for a country ride on a Sunday afternoon, you haven't been in the grocery store. You haven't been, like you say, in Target. You haven't been to the mall. You haven't. You haven't been to church.
Right.
You know? Those things are so much a fabric. And at some point, you sort of get used to it. But you don't, you know, it's you're missing so much of life, so much of socialization. I know when my young son said, after watching Mass on television, saying, I miss going to Mass.
Oh, boy.
You know, as heartening as that was to a parent, he missed all of it. You know, he missed that community.
Yeah.
I mean, he missed hearing the gospel. He missed hearing the homily, because we would always talk about those things beforehand. Well, we couldn't talk about the homily, but we talked about the readings, and maybe the night before, not as some big formal lesson, just as a Mick, you read the proverb Maeve, you read the gospel, and you know. Just like that, and then discuss it a little bit, and then after Mass discuss the homily. What was he talking about? You know, or boy, that was good stuff. You know, and what do you think? But when he said that, what do you think his point was? You know, that those are real great moments that you don't. Believe it or not, you don't get it in math. You don't get it in social studies. You don't get it in science. You don't get it in health. Or you know, you get a lot of information in those classes, but you don't get a homily. You know,
no.
And and they're all teenagers now. But to discuss these things with them when they're 5 years old, when they're 8 years old, you know, and you know you. You, you, Every kid is different, you know, and uh-huh. and the 8-year-old has a different take than the 5-year-old. But they both have their own take, you know. And
that is, even very young, don't they? They do have a take
and,
on it.
And when he said, "I miss going to Mass," he missed the whole thing. He missed mm-hmm. he missed me in the car honking the horn. Where are you guys? You know? Where did you put your shoes last night when you went to bed?
Right.
I put them right there. No, you didn't, because they're not there. They can't walk by themselves.
Mine can, Dad. Really. But you bring up. You just painted a really beautiful picture of the domestic church. Each child was reading different parts of it, and you were discussing it, and then you wrapped it around. You wrapped it all together after Mass about what it, the homily. And so you were giving your children this multiple-day experience, multiple learning modalities, if you will, from reading, from listening to you, to listening to each other, to listening to the priest, and then tying it together. And tying back to what you were saying about the parents being the first teacher, as a Mass tutor, who's been doing it over 20 years, I would say you're actually preparing them to be educated well. Because what you're just talking about is learning and listening and tying information together and then bringing in their opinion and so on. That's what any teacher could hope for, to have children in their classroom.
Yeah, indeed. You know, and it's like, I mean, it's I remember the, you know, like the prodigal son story, and one of the kids saying, "Well, my take from that, the dad is standing there and he tears in his eyes as this son that's gone off and fooled around and you know, is coming back, and the dad's walking out towards the son with tears in his eyes." That one of the kids said, "That wasn't Dad, that was God."
Wow.
And
oh,
you're
that's
like,
amazing, Bob.
Wow. You know, no, it was just a dad and his son. It's a beautiful story. No, that was God.
Oh,
that's
my
how
God.
He feels when you come back.
Wow, what insight. And you weren't like forcing them.
You weren't making them learn.
You were being God's heart and hands to them. You were bridging. You're just being the bridge. And they were gladly running over to discover new things. Wow, that was incredible. And just can I also just note, and kind of like fan crush, as they say it, on the family structure that you've created, you do this continually. You do it on a regular basis, and you have these discussions, and you facilitate this. And can I say, as the families, and how families are being deluded right now, is that society is saying, no, you have to do this, you should do this, and, oh, by the way, everybody in your family should have a little screen
mm-hmm.
in front of them. And so, and I can tell you, I've been in homes where everyone in the family, except the child that's tied down to the kitchen table with me, has got a screen in front of their face.
Yeah.
And there's no interaction. There's no interaction. Or if it is, it's very brief and it's back down. And so with that, it's as being God's heart and hands, seeing that piece as a parent, how we help our children interpret, and talking to parents in all kinds of scenarios. Like I had such a fight to get the phone away from them. And I was actually having a conversation with a mom with teenage boys, and I said, who pays the mortgage? You know, even when they were paying rent, there'd still be rules. You can. So it's helping them to feel re-empowered. To like actually tie it into Amoris Laetitia in paragraph 66. It says, "How sweet and irreplaceable is its training, how fundamental and incomparable its role in the social order." So the social order, if you will, is based on the family. Everything that in society, our ability for conflict resolution, for social justice, tolerance, compassion, how we express love, I would offer goes all the way back to how we learned it in our family.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it's interesting the times when we've had Bishop Soto on, and when it's like at Thanksgiving or Christmas or Easter, I'll say to him, "So, did you have any family traditions on Christmas Eve or Easter Sunday or Thanksgiving that kind of thing growing up?" And he lights up, and he tells me about some special thing their family did, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And you can tell that has formed him, you know, that those family traditions. And maybe they it wasn't like some overarching goal of the tradition, but it's what formed him and his siblings, you know.
That's beautiful.
And he willingly shares those stories, you know, and understands why family is so important, and that's why he pushes it so much, and that's where life's lessons are being learned. Some of them hard, some of them easy, some of them fun, some of them bordering on tragic, maybe. But that's where they're learned, and it's we try to avoid the unpleasant. We try to avoid the things that, you know, well, I don't want to hurt her feelings or his feelings, but this needs to be pointed out. This needs to be corrected, there's the right way to do it and the wrong way to do it, and we all have failed many times. But it's stuff that you have to do it. You can't just be Santa Claus. You can't just be happy dad and happy mom, and the kids can do no wrong, because that goes very wrong very fast. But we I think we've all had that experience where there's a whole bunch of people on screens, even down to 7-year-olds, you know, and by golly, you could stand up in the middle of the room and say, well, did you look at that? It's snowing in July. And not one head would look out to the backyard. And then you say, I guess I'm alone today. You know, it's like, and nobody's even heard you.
Right. And that's another way that the families are almost, I would say, being interfered with indirectly, like the mist under the door. We've not even realized it because it's consuming family life. You go out and you see families, you know, out having a meal, and many of them have a phone, or that just the adults do, and the children are looking at them yearning. And it's that, but I really, that where they feel helpless, and parents do, is I really want to let them know it will be an uphill climb, but it'll be a short period of time.
Yep.
And to claim that back, because your children are, and that's one thing I really wish we talked more parent to parent, and that's the connection between families. And I think it's going to come back more after we reopen more fully, because people are just hungry for that connection. So we value those connections more. Is someone's forming those children, and whether it's coming from a screen or in their ears from you, someone's forming them. And you wouldn't let them talk to a stranger. You wouldn't let them go sit across the restaurant and talk to a complete stranger. Well, that's actually what's going on. Because anybody is coming in. And I was in one home where it was a middle school girl, and she was gaming. And her headphone was kicked back off of her ear just a little bit, and I could hear an adult voice gaming with her. And so I just made a couple of just observations to the parents going, wow, that's oh my gosh, I didn't know they could do that, just to bring it to their attention.
Right.
And that's all I can do. And that's what God guides me to do. But that's, you know, it is that our responsibility and our, and it seems obvious, but we've never had to handle this before in any generation. Our parents taught us all the obvious things about lock the doors, strangers, and so on and so forth, but it's a different picture. And so with it being the year of St. Joseph and people just thinking about him more and the way he was stretched as a human being to handle things that no one prepared him for, right? He didn't know what to do in those scenarios. And God stepped in through the dreams and different dreams and different times, but God stepped in to give him what he needed. So I see one of many, but that one specific encouraging note to parents is that God will show up in different ways. We just have to be aware of it. And Joseph was very open for it. He saw himself as part of a bigger picture, if you will.
Yeah, I can't tell you how many times during this pandemic I've said to the kids, God has not left the building. He's here. He's here. You know, and if you're here, there's a reason. He picked you to be here at this point in history. Period.
Yes.
This is.
Isn't that important?
Yeah.
Yes.
You know.
Yes, you are on the planet right now for an absolutely very important reason.
It's not. It's not by chance. It's not by chance.
No, it's not. We're born exactly when we need to be, and one of the church fathers in one of the writings, I forget who it was, said it's actually a privilege to be alive right now, because this is a very big time to be alive. There's a lot going on. God is calling us to be closer to him, to be able to do the work that he's called us to do. And it's a privilege to be alive right now. honestly, I feel like it's just the biggest job I've ever had. I thought I'd done a lot.
I know.
And overcome.
Yeah. Can I just, let's just, you know, it is interesting to think, just Ozzy and Harriet. I'm dating myself, you know. It was just
they had
this kind of idyllic life, and I think they had two boys, and you know, and they drove a '56 Chevy, and you know, they had these little sitcom type dilemmas. But you know, everybody ended up laughing at the end of the show, and you know, just some of those, you know, just. Gunsmoke, you know, the bad guys always got it and the good guys always won, and you know, and then you can go, yeah, there were a lot of people back in those days that things weren't very good for them, you know. We had a lot of bad stuff going on, you know, so
true.
I don't know what point in history you'd want to pick to say, okay, freeze it, I want to be there, I want to be right there right now, you know.
Yes, that's true, because the grass is always greener, right?
But exactly.
Yes, we did know that not everybody's life was like that, but it does seem like people did, like, live their own life in that really easy phase of the world, when there was the abundance and the ease, that maybe, you know, God didn't have plans for them to be here right now, but he does for you and I and other families.
Yep.
And this is the most crucial time to be anyone that influences children, from an extended family member to a neighbor, to a teacher, to all those other things. And then I really just love how 40 Days for Life has been going on during Lent, because it's just such a connection of life, and that the 40 Days for Life national campaign ends on Palm Sunday. So when I look through the lens of St. Joseph onto the pro-life discussion, is that he didn't, how would you say it? He was shocked, right? And he this was not expected, or a planned pregnancy in his life. But he saw himself, he looked to God's picture. He saw himself at the service of the entire plan of salvation. And is that not what we're called to do?
Indeed, it is. We're not just pawns out here. We have a purpose.
No. That's right. And I love getting out there on the sidewalk and praying and holding up the sign that says, "Men regret lost fatherhood." Mm-hmm. And I think it will shift drastically the life movement in our country when men stand up and take responsibility and get involved. I am involved. I am here. You know, I am not leaving. I am this. And they become part of the equation and make themselves part of the equation.
And
or
even,
just allow themselves.
Even more than taking responsibility, taking part in the joy.
Yes.
You know, the absolute joy of being a father.
Yes, yes, and it just looks like all work, but it is just joy that you can't find anywhere else on the planet, can you?
Nope.
It's like nothing else.
Nope. There is nothing else. There's nothing close.
And yeah, that's an aspect I hadn't considered, is when other men, like fathers, like what you just said, say to the young men, yep, you didn't expect it, just like Joseph, but there's a plan, you're part of a bigger plan, this child's part of a bigger plan, and the joy you will experience, you think your heart is just going to burst with joy.
That's right. That's right. Jane,
you know,
always a joy.
Thank you. It was great talking with you. God bless you and your family.
God bless you and your family. And
thank you.
Have a blessed Holy Week and just a glorious Easter Sunday.
Oh, thank you. It will be. I'm getting chocolate back. So
good.
Thank you, Bob.
Yeah, God bless. That's Jane Lee, God's Heart and Hands Ministry. We'll take a quick break. Back with more on a Bishop's Hour right after this. This portion of the Bishop's Hour is brought to you by a grant from the St. Vincent de Paul Society. Drop by and shop at their thrift store, a beautiful, beautiful thrift store at 2275 Watt Avenue. Open Mondays through Saturdays from 10 to 8 and Sundays from 11 to 6. They also accept donations at the store, donations of furniture, appliances, clothing, books, everyday household items. Your donations help to fund the many projects of the St. Vincent de Paul Society throughout the Diocese of Sacramento. Do such wonderful, wonderful work, and the thrift store is one of the ways they raise the funds to help people throughout the diocese, and also many of their clients are able to access the thrift store for items that they need. You can give them a call. They will come pick it up as well, but you can give them a call. They're at 916 916- 972-1212. And remember, again, the thrift store is open 7 days a week at 2275 Watt Avenue right here in Sacramento. Well, Bishop Soto refers to Christ the King Retreat Center as the jewel of the diocese, and indeed it is. What a beautiful oasis it is. It's located in Citrus Heights, right in the hustle and bustle of the city, and you feel like you're getting away from it all when you turn off the main road and just come into Christ the King Passionist Retreat Center. Christ the King has served Northern California and the Diocese of Sacramento for over 60 years through parish weekend retreats, individual spiritual direction, and a variety of other programs. For information on all the programs that they offer, including residential programs, give them a call. They're at 916-725-4720, or you can visit them at 6520 Van Maren Lane in Citrus Heights. And we certainly thank the St. Vincent de Paul Society and Christ the King Passionist Retreat Center for their fine and longstanding support of the Bishop's Hour.
Hello, this is Jennifer Campbell, Director of Trinity Pines Catholic Center. You're listening to the Bishop's Hour with Bob Dunning.
Thank you, Jennifer, and thanks for all you do for our great Diocese of Sacramento, and hoping that one day you'll get Camp Pendola back up in person. Jennifer's been running a virtual Camp Pendola and did a great job the last year. That's just one of the many hats she wears here in the Diocese of Sacramento. Well, we're pleased to be joined by Deacon Kevin Staskow. Deacon, good day to you.
Good day to you, Bob. How are things with you?
Things are just they're swimming along, heading into Holy Week and the greatness of Holy Week. Holy Week is just all consuming. It's like every part of the church history. It's all wrapped up into these, you know, 5, 6, 7 days.
Yes, that's for sure. I mean, I'm excited. I am going to be celebrating the Triduum with the parish again.
Mm-hmm.
After a year or several months of not serving in public mass, so I'm excited to be getting back and just really looking forward to doing that at St. Lawrence. We have a new team of priests there. Since the last time we celebrated Triduum, so it's just good to celebrate that and to be getting back into to serving in public masses. I was able to get vaccinated, so I've been fully vaccinated against the virus. So I'm excited to do that. Excited to kind of start easing my way back in. Of course, with continuing to follow all the restrictions. So very excited about that.
For people unfamiliar with that, if you're a new listener or just unfamiliar with that word, triduum, that's a double U, just like vacuum. It's the Holy Thursday, Good Friday, and Holy Saturday, leading up to Easter Sunday.
Yep, that's absolutely right. And we are closing out Lent and looking forward to Easter. And I know, Bob, that I'm sure you've had people on talking about Into the Wilderness, which is our
yes.
Lenten retreat that we're offering on Wednesday evenings. And our last Wednesday is coming up here next Wednesday on the 31st at 7 o'clock. And that'll be on Facebook at our Youth and Young Adult Ministry Facebook, SCDOYYA. It's live on Facebook at 7 o'clock, and we have a young adult going to be sharing her story and talking to us about her experience of Lent this year, but also leading us kind of on retreat into deep reflection, on how we continue to find Jesus and continue to follow him, at this time. And so excited to have her during Holy Week. Wednesday before the Triduum, like you said, the three most important masses of the year, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, Holy Thursday, Good Friday, and of course the Easter Vigil on Saturday evening.
Yeah, and explain, if you will, no Mass on Good Friday?
You know, the church envisions the Triduum service as one long Mass that lasts for 3 days. Mm-hmm. So the idea is that the Mass starts on Thursday, and it's really three parts of the same liturgy, or that's how we're supposed to
conceive of it. With the Mass of the Lord's Supper.
So a lot of people, like, just go to one, or I really like Good Friday or whatever.
Right.
But if you really want to experience this, you really should go to all three. So Thursday is, as you said, the Mass of the Last Supper, and we celebrate the institution of the Eucharist, the Last Supper, and when Jesus washed the disciples' feet, and the priest or deacon or all the clergy from that parish dramatically washes the feet. That's a little bit modified for this year, but traditionally they wash 12 people's feet to represent the 12 apostles. Some parishes go crazy and try to wash everybody's feet, but the service is supposed to be 12 kind of representatives of the parish.
Exactly.
Their feet get washed. On Friday we celebrate Good Friday, and we don't receive the Eucharist, or we don't have a Eucharistic prayer. The bread and wine is not turned into the Eucharist on Friday. We do have a communion service with the Eucharist that from Thursday that is held in repose, held in the tabernacle overnight till the next day, and there's a communion service on Thursday, and then a communion service on Friday, and then on Saturday we have the Easter Vigil, where all of our new Catholics receive their sacraments of baptism, confirmation, and First Communion. Sometimes that's children and adults together. So anyone who is past the age of reason, when they're brought into the church, they're supposed to be brought into the church at the Easter Vigil and receive all three sacraments together: baptism, First Communion, or baptism, confirmation, and First Communion, at that amazing service on Saturday night. And that's where the deacon gets to sing for a really long time, like 10 minutes.
Yeah.
So I've done that twice this year. Father Adam in my parish is going to be doing the Exalted, so I don't have to sing on Saturday night this year. A little bit less stressful for me, not having to chant for that long. But if you haven't experienced it, it's just a beautiful, beautiful service, just celebrating the resurrection, the conquering of sin and death by our Lord, and the opening of the gates of heaven to us as human beings, so that that we can conquer sin and death in our lives, and hopefully one day be risen from the dead and join Christ in heaven at the end of our lives. So it's just a beautiful, I just think it just fills me with hope. Light is the real symbol. It starts with a fire outside, and then we light candles, and it's just that light of Christ and this idea of no matter how dark our life gets, that there's always hope, that Christ is always with us, that the ending is always resurrection. And you'll love this as a father moment, Bob. We were talking about, my wife works full-time in the parish, and I'm going to be doing the Triduum at the other parish. And my daughters have to come on Easter and help with some of the masses, being ushers and helping check people in and so forth. And so my wife was saying to my daughters, well, your dad's going to be doing the Triduum at his parish at St. Lawrence, and, I'm going to be at St. Clair, and you have to help Easter morning, so you don't have to go to the Triduum. Maybe you could stay and, like, watch the dog, take care of the dog and not go to the Triduum, not go to the Holy Saturday, the Easter Vigil service this year. And my daughter said, but, Mom, that's my favorite liturgy of the year.
Wow. I love it.
And I couldn't believe it. I was like, wow. Who would have thought that you, and we go every year, right? But I always think, what 14-year-old wants to sit in church for 3 hours?
Yeah,
right?
It's a very long service.
Right? But it was just beautiful, warmed my heart, and gave me a renewed sense of hope.
Yeah.
To hear her say that at the end of the pandemic, and maybe it's like, you know, with the pandemic, if you get to gather with people, that's always a good thing. It doesn't matter what it is. But I just felt like,
yeah,
I felt very affirmed as a father and of somebody who's tried to pass on the faith. And she's probably heard me talk about how special that liturgy is for me and how important it is to the life of the church, I think. And so, but it's very, very exciting.
That's
shared experiences, right?
Just that's like, oh, huge, you know, boy. Just tuck it in. I was telling the story about my son when he was either 14 or 15, but it was during the pandemic. And he said, after watching, it was last Easter, watching Mass on TV, our home parish, St. James in Davis, and Father Ray there doing it alone, you know. And afterwards, my son saying, I miss going to Mass, you know, just like the experience you had, you know. And it's like, holy cow, you know, like, where did that come from, you know? And it is, yeah. And the Mass you're describing is, as we both know, and so many people do, it is. It's about 3 hours long, and you don't hear too many 14-year-olds say they want to go to that one, and yet, yeah, you experience that as a dad, and you and your wife are doing the right, are doing something right, that's for sure. And you know, the times I've been to the vigil Mass, it's one of those things. When your own children are involved in some activity, yeah, it can bring tears to your eyes. It's probably one of the few events I've ever been at where my family wasn't participating in it, and yet I was still crying because it was so beautiful. It was to see these people coming into the church was just so moving. People who, they're doing this voluntarily. I mean, I was baptized the day I was born, you know, and I didn't go, oh, I want to be Catholic. You know, these people did. And yeah, it's so moving.
I do think, you know, as you say, I mean, it's just, it is really moving to see people get baptized at the vigil.
Yep.
And I think it's important for, you know, for us who maybe were baptized as infants to try to mark that day of our own baptism and make a big deal about, this idea, because baptism is really where it all starts, right? And it's
right,
where we're called, you know, where we become part of God's family. We receive our, you know, our kind of our marching orders to, you know, to live for others and not for ourselves anymore, and to be a new creation and to be cleansed from original sin. I mean, there's so much symbolism, and it's so important to our life of faith, and so many of us just take that for granted, right? And so many of us, don't celebrate that properly. So I think that the Easter Vigil reminds us of that, and helps us to remember our own baptism. We all renew our baptismal promises at the Easter Vigil, because we need to remember that, wow, this is the moment where we truly became part of God's family, and we're blessed to receive the Holy Spirit in such a special way, and you know, it should strengthen us and move us forward individually, and obviously as a community, since we're all gathered there together to witness the miracle of baptism and the sacraments, and to celebrate, obviously, in a incredibly special way. Not that we don't do it every Mass, but to celebrate just the glory of the resurrection after the long season of Lent. And I just hope that this year, at a time when we've all been struggling because of the pandemic and so many things that we couldn't do, and this Lent has been, you know, darker than usual, I think. Hopefully this will be a celebration. If we can go in person, if we can get a ticket, right?
That's
25%
right,
capacity. Or if we can watch it online, you know. I mean, again, this is a great opportunity to watch it online. If you don't want to stay up late, you could watch it the next day, because there's going to be hundreds of them, you know, many Masses streamed across the whole diocese. But it's very exciting. I'm excited to be uh, to be on the altar for the, you know, for the Easter Vigil this year. And I hope people are excited about coming and being a part of it.
Yeah. Can you imagine if they had live streamed the Last Supper and now we could go back in the archive, we just call it up. Here is the Last Supper. Here it is, guys. It was just one. It was just one episode. They didn't. You're not going to binge watch it. You just got the one episode here. Yeah.
Well, in a way, you know, we're reliving that every time we celebrate that
exactly.
together, right?
Exactly.
And we don't want to that's the amazing thing or the miracle of the Mass is that. You know, we get an opportunity to live it over and over again, and to be, you know, in communion with our Lord and be in communion with one another. And I've said it before in this program, and I've said it many in other contexts as well. That, you know, I just think this this pandemic forcing us to be home and not to be able to receive the Eucharist as much as we want. I hope we come to a better appreciation of what we have and what we receive in the Mass. And I also think we've come to a better understanding and realization that that Christ is present in our families, in our homes, mm-hmm. in our interaction and love and care and concern for one another, and that both of those are really important. It's like we just can't, some people I think sometimes we think, wow, if I could just sit here and adore the Eucharist and do nothing but adore the Eucharist and not be connected. But I think Christ, the risen Christ, present in all of our humanity, right? Present in every moment of our day, present in our workplace, present in the community. And we as the laity out of our baptism are called to show others that that is really true and to witness to the fact that we can see that. And I think so often we think all the holy things happen at church and outside of church, there's, whatever, if you want something holy, you better go to church. You're not going to find it. I hope in the pandemic we realize that there's holiness, there's the presence of Christ, there's the Holy Spirit active, there's God our Father watching over us in our homes at every moment in those interactions, in this year, and we've made it through this year because of the grace and the love and the Holy Spirit and the grace of God and the love of the Holy Spirit, being with us through all of this. So hopefully it helps us to appreciate the Eucharist more and also be able to see and experience and really feel the true presence of Christ, Christ, and God, Father, Son, and Holy Spirit in our everyday existence of our lives. And I think too often we take that for granted or we make the mistake of thinking holy things only happen at the church.
Mm-hmm.
And if we don't get to church, we're not going to experience it. I think we need to realize that Christ is in both places, in every moment of our lives and in every experience we have. And if we can stay close to him, keep our eyes and ears open, we will experience Christ. We will experience love. We will experience silver linings in the darkness. And I think that's what the Easter Vigil is for me. It's about light. It's about the happy ending that we've all been promised and that we all believe in.
Yeah, that's so well put, Deacon. And it's so true. People say, "Oh, you're a religion. It's all doom and gloom, and you all these rules, and you can't do this, and you can't." Our religion is about hope. Our religion is a happy ending. Period.
Well, and I think that's the question we all have to ask ourselves, right? Do we really believe that, right?
Yeah.
Because I think if we walk through our lives saying it but not believing it, we're going to have our heads down,
yep.
And our eyes, sadness in our eyes, and I just think, it was Pope Francis who said, if you want to spread the gospel, sourpuss, you can't be a sourpuss.
That's
and,
right.
And we don't want to be sourpusses, right? We want to, people need to be able to see that hope in us, right? We just had the marriage conference last weekend, and on the 20th, Saturday the 20th, we had the Together in Holiness conference. The afternoon speaker at that conference, Dominic, I can't remember his last name, but it was such an amazing talk because his whole thing was about evangelization and that married couples needed to be a witness to the world. And the way we be a witness, and the way we really truly evangelize, he said, was two ways, right? One is saying, where do people hurt, or where do I see hurt in the world, in others, in the people I meet? And our response as Catholic Christians is just to ask, how can I help? You know, and it isn't about telling them the doctrines of the church. It's about helping them in their time of need, in their time of suffering. And just being a witness by our actions of being there to help in any way we can, no matter how busy we get as parents, how crazy our family life can get, finding the time to just be open and helping and showing concern, care, and doing something to help them, right? And his point was that then people will come to you at some point, and they will say, how did you find time to help me? Your life is crazy. Mm-hmm. I want to be more like that, right? And that's when you tell them about Jesus and you tell them why, you know? But I think it has to start from really believing that, finding the time and the energy and the compassion and the empathy to help, regardless of what's going on in your own life. To reach out and help your neighbor regardless, right? To me, that's rooted in a relationship with Christ and seeing how he serves us and loves us and saying, I want to be more like that. And the point of evangelization is we should be that for others. They should look at us and say, there's something different about you, and I want to be more like that, right? It's like you said, Bob, it's that hope, that joy, that love, that's really what our faith is about. And we need to be able to witness that. We need to be able to boldly tell that to other people. And I think that, you know, that's sometimes where I think we as Catholics fail. We keep it to ourselves, right? We share it with each other. And you know, other Catholics often aren't the people that need to hear it.
Yeah, that's exactly, you know, it's in polite company. It's like, oh, don't bring up everybody's okay. You know, if they're religious, fine. If they don't not religious, that's fine. Whatever works for them, just keep it to yourself. Tell them about that great restaurant you went to. Tell them about that great movie you saw, ball game you went to. But don't tell them about your faith. Don't tell them the truth of Jesus Christ. That's crazy.
Well, and I really don't know what we're so afraid of, right? I mean, yeah. We want to, we have the First Amendment, right? We have the right to say whatever we want.
That's right.
So I think that's the whole thing. Like, I mean, our First Amendment right of free speech and. I think we should be excited about that too, right? I mean, and we should take advantage of that right by sharing what we believe with others and being a little bit more bold about that. You know, maybe we could work on that in the coming. But I think this speaker at the marriage conference, I mean, his point was really it comes through action, not through words, right? So it's how are you any different than your neighbors in your neighborhood? And some of us need to really ask that question. I mean, sometimes I have to ask that. I mean, do I even know my neighbors? If you ask my neighbors, would they say that I was any more generous or helpful or giving or forgiving than anybody else in the neighborhood? And if the answer is no, then I think we need to look at ourselves and say, hey, are we really living out this faith we say we believe in?
We're talking with Deacon Kevin Staskow, and boy, you're so right, and. I remember that. I didn't see that speaker. I think, was he, this is the one from Colfax? Dominic?
No. This that was the Uchitsons. the couple, but this was afternoon speaker. I was trying to find it online. I just can't remember his name. But anyway,
we'll find it.
He worked with the John Paul II.
Right. Yes.
Institute, and it was a national speaker that was on in the afternoon.
Right.
And again, it was that point of like evangelization is about is about helping people, materially helping others, right? And that's how you get to them, because then eventually they'll come back to you and they'll say, you know, hey, thank you for what you did. I don't know how you found the time to do it. I don't know how, whatever. I want to be more like you. And then that's when you hit them with, because of Jesus, right? It's because of my faith. It's because, it's because that's what I'm called to do. It's because that's why we're married. That's, because we want to spread, because Jesus brought us together and Jesus is present in the center of this relationship. And again, that our marriages and our families should be evangelizing based on who we are and how we respond to others.
Indeed. I think the name we're searching for is Dominic Anton.
Anton. Yes, that's correct.
Yes. That's why I have a producer.
Thank you, Gabe.
He's got a photographic memory.
I'll prepare. Tell Gabe, I promise I'll prepare him for my segment a little bit better next time. At least I have the right name. There you go.
See, he's got a photographic memory. I have a photographic memory, but I haven't developed the film yet. So,
I do think that that's the other piece, is that I think people make the mistake of thinking that our faith is complicated. And I don't think it's complicated. I think it's deep, but not complicated. And so I think that's what I've been trying to tell people for a long time, is part of what we need to do is stop using super churchy language, stop hitting people over the head with long quotes from saints or the catechism. And we need to get back to the basics of we're here to serve others. That's the point of the Eucharist. That's the point of Holy Thursday, right? Washing each other's feet and being servants to one another. And, if we would just embrace that and nothing else, servanthood, a unselfish servanthood in day-to-day life with just the people we run into, that would be the start, right? I think Mother Teresa said something like, if you want to change the world, go home and love your family, right? I mean, I like to spread it a little beyond the family, because I think sometimes your family's easy to love or maybe hard to love, but it's a challenge. But that whole idea of, like, obviously the people that you're related to, you're going to try to love,
right?
And that may be a challenge with some of them, but obviously they're close to you. But what about the people you don't even know? And I do think literally in our neighborhoods today, there are people dying of COVID. Literally, and there are people dying of other things or suffering from mental illness and loneliness. And we don't even know that because we don't know them. Right. So it starts by, hey, I wonder who my neighbors are. Right.
Right.
Again, I thought those two questions from him were great. Where do you hurt? How can I help?
Amen.
That's what Jesus, and his point was, that's what really Jesus did. He walked around, he found people. Where did they hurt? How can I help? Right. He helped them. And a lot of times he forgave their sins he helped them psychologically and forgave their sins before he cured their ailment, their physical ailment.
Exactly.
Right. I mean, it was this idea that, we're here to help and to be present and to be with you. And that's the most important piece. And that's really all the witness we need, right? We start there, and that leads to the conversations that we need to have about other issues, right? Mm-hmm. Instead of leading with the issues So anyway, hopefully people will really take the time to think about, the suffering, death, and resurrection of Jesus during this Holy Week coming up next week. And if you haven't ever been to the Triduum, I hope people out there will consider experiencing all three, not just one, but try to experience all three, Holy Thursday, Good Friday, and Holy Saturday, the Easter Vigil, all together, because it's supposed to, in the church, in our church theology, it's one liturgy over the 3 days.
Perfectly
put. One mass over the 3 days.
Deacon Kevin Stasko, always a joy to talk with you. God's blessings to you and your family and on this beautiful Holy Week and the glory of Easter Sunday.
Absolutely. Thank you, Bob. Thanks for having me on.
Thank you, Deacon. That's Deacon Kevin Stasko. That's going to do it for us for today. Thanks for listening. God bless.